A new clean comedy club. That's what's coming up on The Art of Bombing, episode 214.
My friend Dan, he's got a podcast, 'cause all comics need a podcast, and nobody had a podcast called The Art of Bombing. So Dan went out and bought a tape deck. Who knows why he bought a tape deck? Podcasts don't get played on tape decks, but Dan is from the 80s. So hey there, all you funny jerks, come talk to Dan about your work. Tell him all about your worst times. It's The Art of Bombing.
Hello, friends, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Art of Bombing podcast. I'm your host, Dan Bublitz Jr., as it is my podcast, and you're listening to it. And welcome to another Tuesday. Today is Tuesday, August 3rd, 2021. Running a little late on putting the podcast out because I drove all day Sunday, and then yesterday I was just too tired to do anything. And I'll talk more about that coming up. But today on the show, fantastic guest Kyle Yamada is my guest today. He's a fantastic Christian comedian and soon to be the new owner of the Gutty's Comedy Club Minnesota, the franchise of the Gutty's Comedy Club in Indiana. So we talked a lot about that. It is a clean comedy club. Like I said, they have a location in Indiana, just outside of Indianapolis. And now they have this new location that'll be opening up in Edina in September. The grand opening weekend is September 10th and 11th. Bone Hampton is the comedian that is headlining that weekend. He's a fantastic clean comedian because that's the deal. It's clean comedy, all clean comedy. So it's safe for everybody. If you're interested in that, go check out Gutty's Comedy Club. Get your tickets. Go to the grand opening. I'll actually be featuring there September 24th and 25th, so I'll be there at the end of the month, but it's going to be a good time. It's going to be great, so go support this new comedy club that is now going to be located in the Twin Cities. But now that you know what we're going to be talking about, before we get to actually into that conversation, I do have to take care of some housekeeping. You know, I have been on the Dan on the Run comedy tour, and it has been going fantastic. I just got back from Montana on Monday. That's why I was tired. I drove straight through. I got up early, and it's like a 13-hour drive. And so Monday, I was pretty wiped. I was supposed to go to a dentist appointment, and I was so tired, I canceled that. And I just pretty much slept and was lazy most of the day. I was also battling some issues, and you can kind of tell I'm still a little bit nasally. When I was in Montana, I had some issues with my allergies and sinuses, and I'm a lot better now, but Monday I was pooped, so I just rested. But Montana was fantastic. I want to do a shout out to Garrison Choits and Last Best Comedy. They put on a great show in Bozeman for me. It was fantastic. Great crowd, great comics on the show. Then I got to hang out. I did a little camping while I was there, which was fun. And then on Saturday, I performed at my cousin Steven's barbecue for his company that he owns. He owns a plumbing and heating company, and it was their employee picnic barbecue, and I performed there, and that was fun. And then Saturday night, Gary Busby and Paul McCarter from Laugh Out Loud Productions had a great show at the Loft Dance Club in Billings, Montana. They were all great shows, great crowds. It was fantastic. I didn't know what to expect from these shows because I'm a nobody in comedy. I'm just a working comedian. I don't have a ton of credits, so not a lot of people know who I am. But both shows, all three shows were great. All the crowds were fantastic, and I had a good time in Montana, and I can't wait to go back to Montana to do more comedy because it was fantastic. Coming up on the Dan on the Run comedy tour, I do have some dates coming up. August 7th, I'll be in Rochester, Minnesota at Brothers Bar and Grill. I will also be, this is not part of the tour, this is just a fun thing in the city. If you're in the Twin Cities, I will be at Sisyphus Comedy Room, Sisyphus Brewing on Wednesday, which is tomorrow, August 4th, for the Punchline Punch Out. It is a show where you have 24 hours to write a set, 5-minute set based on a topic that you are given. And so you can come to that and see what I write on the topic that I was giving. It's going to be a good time. Then on August 7th, in addition to the show that I'm doing in Rochester, that afternoon I will be doing my EPK workshop, which is how to build an EPK for your success. And if you don't know what EPK is, it stands for Electronic Press Kit. And if you don't know what that means you should probably take the class. It's only $30. It goes from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. Central Standard Time. So it's not a long course. You get a lot of great tools that'll help you put together a great electronic press kit that will help you get booked and help the people who book you promote you. So if you want to attend that, again, it's $30. All you need to do is go register at blitzedentertainment.com, and you can find all the information there. Then once you get done signing up and you're already on the computer, why don't you head over to theartofbombingpod.com. Make sure you're following us and subscribing wherever you listen to the podcast, whether it's Spotify, Amazon Podcast, Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, wherever you listen, make sure you hit subscribe and or follow depending on the platform. Also, it would be nice while you're on one of those sites if you could give us a 5-star rating, maybe leave us a nice review. That'd be cool. While you're on the website, submit a bomb. Somebody submitted a bomb that's going to be included in the new newsletter, which, by the way, when you're on the website, you can subscribe to the newsletter. I got a lot of great feedback from last month's newsletter, and I'm going to continue this month with I'm going to be writing a piece about saving money while you're on the road. So there's still time to sign up for the newsletter. All you got to do is go to artofbombingpod.com, sign up to subscribe to the newsletter. It's going to probably come out Thursday or Friday. So you still have time for that. Like I said, the traveling put my schedule behind on everything, but I'm going to get caught up this week. And like I said, go do all that stuff at theartofbombingpod.com. You can even you can buy some merch if you want. Or if you want to support the show financially, again, you can sign up for a Patreon. That's patreon.com/artofbombingpod. Or if you enjoy an episode and you want to leave a tip by buying me a coffee, you can go to buymeacoffee.com/debubcomedy. Just like Josh Liston did after he listened to last week's episode with Mike Kaplan. He enjoyed it so much, he gave a $5 tip. And thank you, Josh. I really appreciate your support, and I really appreciate that you listen to the podcast. And I appreciate all the little shout-outs that you do on Twitter of the podcast. They do not go unnoticed, so thank you. All right, that's enough of my house cleaning, housekeeping, chitter chatter, whatever you want to call it. Let's get into this great episode with my friend and great comedian, Kyle Yamada. Enjoy.
And now it's time for the stand-up soundbite.
But I've got to admit, it was a little weird growing up in South Dakota being half Japanese, you know, because there's no other Asians there. You know, it's like one lady the other day said, "Well, Kyle, did you grow up in an Asian community?" I'm like, "I grew up in South Dakota. My dad is the Asian community." Then she said, "Well, if you're Japanese, you must love to eat sushi. Listen, you order sushi in South Dakota, they bring you a rainbow trout with rice-a-roni." "With a side of ranch dressing. Here you go, sir." But it's interesting. Unfortunately, my parents have passed away. But my dad was Japanese, and my mom was, among other things, Irish. And that's kind of a weird combination, isn't it? Japanese and Irish. So basically, all that means is that I used to get really, really drunk and then take a lot of pictures. You know what I'm saying? Jeez. I also eat corned beef and cabbage with chopsticks.
So have you done any shows in the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, I've done some church shows in the last few weeks. You know, it's funny because I haven't I haven't worked hardly at all in Minneapolis, so I've been traveling a lot, especially, I mean, since the pandemic, you know, it's been weird for all of us, of course. And I actually got back from L.A. last week. I was doing a couple shows, and I was able to be in a pilot out there, so we'll see how that
You had to be in a pilot?
It was a pilot. It was a stand-up show about global comedians. So there was me and about, I think it was five other comics from around the world, and it's called Global Comedy Club. And so it's basically we got up and it's really weird. It was in a studio like this, a small studio, yeah. No audience. So we did a three-minute set, and then we sat down with the host and just kind of talked about our background, which was weird because, you know, the comics were from, like, Venezuela. There's one from, like, Madagascar. I didn't even know they had. And one from Egypt. And then there was me. You know, so they like the fact that I'm half Japanese, but I grew up in South Dakota in the Midwest, you know, so that's why they had me on. But that, it was interesting.
That is an interesting background. I mean, that is an interesting thing to be from South Dakota and be half Japanese. Yeah. Like, that's definitely can. And I'm sure your upbringing was interesting because of that, too. I mean, because I, too, am from South Dakota.
Right,
so
right,
that is
right,
something
right.
We share. We share where we grew up.
Right.
As far as South Dakota, I was east side.
Yeah, west side.
Yeah. Oh, we can't have any more conversations. We're now feuding.
That's right. That is actually separate states.
Yeah, pretty much. It essentially is. It is. Oh, that's cool that you got to do the pilot. Do you know what it was like as far as like a network, like,
so they say it's for Apple TV, you know.
Oh, okay.
And just like anything else, you know, we'll see if it gets picked up. And
oh, for sure. So, but that's the plan, is that hopefully it goes to Apple TV,
right?
And that's cool.
And it is a good experience. I mean, mm-hmm. It was cool. I met some really cool comics, you know, and it's interesting. You know, I'm pretty much just know American comics, you know, so that was really interesting. Mm-hmm. that I got to see some of the comedy from around the world, which was really interesting. So
I'll bet.
It was, and first of all, you know, I'll be honest with you, one of them I didn't understand very well, you know, just phonetically. And but he says he's really funny in his country.
Well, you have to take his word for it.
Right.
Take the word for it. That's so. Did they do it all in English then?
Yeah, it was.
Oh, okay,
it
so
was.
They had a yeah.
With the exception of that one, I guess they did two sets, one in English and one what was it, Arabic? I want to say. I'm not very.
Yeah, not.
I'm
sure.
From South Dakota. Dan.
No, yeah,
you,
right.
You know, we're.
Yeah, we're not smart people.
No,
we don't claim to be smart people. Oh, no, that's great. That's awesome. And then you said you've been doing some church shows. That's something that you kind of specialize in. You're a squeaky clean comedian, and you too are. And that's something interesting, just the fact that you were talking about you haven't really done anything in Minneapolis.
Right.
Like, nobody, like, in the local scene knows who you are,
right,
in the sense, because you haven't done anything
right
locally.
Right.
But that's because you're busy working the road. And that, to me, is always interesting when there's a comic that's like that, just because that happens. You're busy working.
Right. Well, and the other thing about that is, you know, I'm pretty new here to the Twin Cities. I mean, I moved here in, what was it, August of 2019, you know, and
you moved up here a few months after I did.
Right. Right. And you know, what was it, 4 or 5 months later is when COVID happened.
Yep.
And so, you know, you throw that year away, and then, and like you said, I like doing clubs. You know, and I started out in the clubs, and clubs are fun, and it's just kind of where my career has kind of steered. It's just, I feel like I'm more geared towards church shows, and that's just kind of how it came about, I believe. And I enjoy doing church shows, and I do a lot of Christian events, like, mm-hmm. You know, I did a Christian singles event in Montana about a month ago. A lot of marriage ministry shows, you know, things like that. And that's, you know, I just feel that's where my wheelhouse is.
Yep.
You know, I enjoy it. And like I said, I'd love to go back and do shows in clubs. I mean, it's just that's where the root of comedy is. I mean, it comes out of the clubs.
Yeah.
You know, and you've got, I just, it's in your, if you're a comedian, it's in your bones, you know, and you love clubs. You know?
Well, so, now you're going to have your own club. Can you talk about that?
Oh yeah.
I should have asked that before we recorded, but you're going to be opening up a franchise, which is pretty amazing.
Well, and that was a weird thing. It was one of those things that just kind of happened organically. I wasn't looking to, you know, be a part of a club or mm-hmm. own a club or be a partner. I did a club in Indiana called Gutties. I know you've done that club, in Indianapolis, and it's a clean club. You know, it's I guess family friendly. And I think a lot of people are, have a weird idea about what that means. And, you know, it's family friendly, but it's not necessarily, it's not like geared towards kids. I mean, it's still,
exactly.
The comedians that come in, their humor is still geared towards adults. You know, it's just, you know, they don't use offensive language. You know, not a lot, no sexual innuendos, you know, things like that. It's clean comedy.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it you can bring your kids. They might be bored to death because they might not understand. But, you know, and I really like the concept, and it kind of falls, you know, and I'm a clean comic, and so it fell in line with what, you know, what I do. And I got to know the owners pretty well, and we got to be friends and stayed in touch. And so they reached out and said, you know, we're thinking about opening up, you know, a couple others, you know, would you be interested? And I was like, at first, I was like, no. You know,
you're like, this sounds expensive.
Yeah, and time consuming. That's right. And finally, it just is interesting how things just fell in line. And then I just felt this push that, you know, maybe we should do this.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, we're going to open one, a Gutties Comedy Club in Edina.
Nice.
So we're excited about that. We know, I mean, this is a... the Twin Cities, it's a really good scene for comedy. You know, there's a lot of options, mm-hmm. a lot of good options.
Yeah, there's quite a few comics in the Twin Cities have dry bar specials. So you know that, you know, right there tells you quite a few can work clean.
Right, you know? Right, right. And, you know, like I said, the scene here is good. I mean, there's a lot of comics, a lot of talented comics in the Twin Cities. And I mean, I know there's comics out there that I haven't seen that are very talented, you know, and like I said, I've been a year since we've been out to the clubs. And
now that you're opening a club, everybody will want to know you.
Well, yeah, we'll see.
You're going to have all kinds of friends in the Twin Cities now.
but you know, it's a situation where I think we feel real fortunate in this space. It's a great space. It's a great community. It's, you know, we're in a town with a lot of talent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we'll have a lot to offer for the community, you know, and work with the existing entities in the community that have done such a great job over the years in producing comedy.
Mm-hmm. No, that's great. I'm looking forward to it. And it's great too, because it offers an alternative, you know, like, because this is something I've always believed. I primarily work clean myself too, and I've been labeled as a clean comic. I don't label myself that. Other people label me. I'm just like, trying to be a comic, but I chose to write clean because I had great mentors that, you know, fostered me and put that in early in my, you know, early development, where they're like, hey, if you work clean and write clean, you're gonna, you know, there's more opportunities. And I also have kind of a business mind, so like I easily saw that. I'm like, oh, okay. So, you know, a lot of the reason I do that is for, you know, it's for those purposes. It's the I get the business end of it or whatever. But I always believe, like, you know, there's people that won't go to a comedy club because they know that they might have to listen to profanity. And believe it or not, there's people that don't want to hear profanity.
Right.
You know, they don't want to hear offensive language and things like that. So having a place like that, or a place where they, you know, they don't have to worry about it happening, is great, because now they can go have a club experience, you know, a comedy club experience, without having to, you know, feel that, you know, I might get upset, or, you know, I might be feel uncomfortable, or whatever it might be. So I think it's great.
Well, yeah, and you know, it's funny, because a lot of people think, you know, it's not like I'm not a comedy snob, mm-hmm. by any means. I, you know, there are some blue comics out there that I think that are absolutely hilarious, that are absolutely genius, you know, and just flat funny, you know, and that I look up to, you know, and me, kind of like you, just made the choice, you know, that I'm just going to work clean. I mean, that's just who I feel I am. And like you said, it makes you more marketable. It gives you more opportunities. And at the time, I was just scared my mom would come up on stage and beat me up.
Slap you around if said the wrong thing. That's great. Yeah, a lot of it's practicality. That's what it really, for me, a lot of it's practicality. It's practical to work that way. But now, and I agree with you, I think when people... When you get labeled or you call yourself a clean comic, other comics automatically think you're kind of a snob,
right,
or you're like hot better than them because you can work without doing profanity or whatever. And I think that's it's a negative misconception, because there's comics that I love that are blue, but that works for them, and more power too. I always say funny's funny,
right?
You know, that's how, you know, it doesn't matter if it's a blue joke or a clean joke, it can be funny. But one thing that I've experienced more times than not, especially, you know, when you're working in a bar show, I've had people come up after the show and they're like, hey, I really appreciate it, even though you're in a bar, you were clean, you didn't use any foul language or whatever, like, I appreciate that. This is a show that I could have brought my parents to, or a family member, or whatever it might be. And I think that alone, I'm like, oh, that's awesome. You know,
right?
When people notice it.
Well, I think it's funny that I had a couple of those comments in a church show I did about a month, 3 weeks ago in Iowa, and people came, they said the same thing. We appreciate you. I was like, we're in a church. What were you expecting? You know, what kind of church do you go to?
What kind of comedy were you thinking you were about to get? That's funny. So you said you do a lot of churches and stuff. Does that, like, when do you perform at them? Is that something they do, like, on Sundays, like, after church? Or do they do special shows, like, Saturday nights, kind of like events or whatever?
Yeah, a lot of times what I've been doing is, like, they'll be specific to, like, some kind of ministry, like a marriage ministry. I do a lot of marriage material. You know, I've been married for 15 years and, you know, have been through, you know, the ups and downs of marriage. And so I write a lot about that. And so I do a lot of marriage ministry. Like, they'll have marriage date nights or date night out or, you know, whatever. And usually it's like a Thursday or Friday or Saturday night. Like that. In fact, in August, I'm doing a couple shows that are even getting like asking me to do more, because I am a Christian. I'm pretty devout in my faith. And, you know, like I'm doing, like, on Saturday night with a couple of shows in North Dakota, actually, I'm doing a comedy show on Saturday, and they were asking me to come on Sunday and do a little testimony.
Oh, okay.
You know, so that's going to be part of my gig. And, you know, and I love it. It's really interesting, because I think as a Christian, it, you know, it deepens my faith, because it just makes me reflect on who I am and what I'm doing and what my purpose is. And like I said, this is just the direction that, you know, my path has taken. And that's kind of a lot what I'm doing. And I've also been doing some, like, marriage retreats. And I did this, I think I mentioned.
Where
I
you
did
leave
it.
And you retreat from your wife. I see what the kind of racket you got going
exactly.
on.
Exactly. That's they don't call them retreats. I call them retreats. But I actually did a marriage retreat in Glacier Park up in Montana, which is beautiful. I don't know if you've ever been there. I've never been there before.
You've never been there?
No,
so,
it was beautiful.
I went I didn't get to experience Glacier Park as much as I'd like to, because we were up there last July during the pandemic, a lot of the park was closed.
Yep.
Because we went up for, my cousin had an outdoor wedding, and he lives just south of there. Down by Kalispell.
Yep.
He lives in Lakeside, which is just outside of Kalispell.
Yeah, that's where I flew into, and then it was like a beautiful camp in the mountains just on this side of, what is it, West Glacier, I think it's called. And, you know, it was a bit, I mean, I think the show that I did was, it's just, they were doing a whole retreat, and then I was the entertainment on the Saturday night, and I mean, I think there was a good 450 people there, and they're all Christian singles. Let me tell you, there's a reason those people are single.
You better hope the people that book you don't hear this. Or you'll be done.
They're in Montana.
No, I'm just kidding. So how? That's an interesting thing, and I don't know how much you want to talk about that. But like, how do you find these gigs, or how do people find you for these gigs specifically? Do you have a booking agent for this, or do you do it yourself, or how? How do you get into this circuit?
I work with some booking agents, but those are mostly, you know, I bumped into you doing shows together through some booking agents. But with the church shows, I started out as, I should say, my wife is actually does most of my, she does, let's be honest, she does everything. She, you know, she does
she's your
my
manager,
marketing. She's my
agent. Okay.
She's my travel agent. She does everything. And, you know, at
it's
first.
Good to have a team.
Yeah. At first, you know, because she does have some marketing background, and she just started basically putting it out there to Christian organizations and churches what I do. And we got a good, real good response coming back. And so, you know, a lot of my work is repeat work. Just like, you know, we always get, you know, they want, oh, we loved it. Maybe we'll have you come back for next year's whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of word of mouth in the community. And then since my wife actually just got a job at our church, you know, full-time job. So I really don't know what I'm going to do now. So we're kind of figuring that out right now.
Sounds like you might need a personal assistant. Is that what you're saying?
No. That's what I'm saying. But, you know, she's saying, no, that means paying someone, and then I can do it. Yeah. I can do it. So we'll see. But that's kind of
work kinda a little harder and do this yourself, kid.
Yeah. Right.
Listen here, Kyle. We need to have a talk.
So that's kind of how I got going is basically, you know, it's a game just like anything else where you have to hustle and you have to make opportunities for yourself. And, you know, that's how I kind of got going on that.
That's interesting. Now, I usually don't do like a whole like interview as far as like a background in comedy, but I am curious about your background a little bit, only because being in South Dakota, and I know, like, I've been doing comedy for like almost 11 years. Mm-hmm. I know most all comics that are from South Dakota, because there's not a ton of us,
mm-hmm.
for one.
Mm-hmm.
And you're one that kind of slipped through the radar. I mean, we literally met in 2019, right after you moved up here, because of our mutual friend Brandon Young.
Right.
And I know him from San Diego.
Right.
So, like, there's no South Dakota connection
there
at all with Brandon, but that's how we met. And so I'm curious, how did you get into comedy out there?
Well, it's interesting because I actually got into comedy in Los Angeles right out of college. So,
okay.
So there's a little bit of disconnect because when I came out of college, I moved to Los Angeles, where that's where almost all my family, except for my parents, live. You know, my parents live in South Dakota, but it's one of those things. I grew up in South Dakota. I never really knew my grandparents, my cousins, my uncles and aunts. And so after college, I said, you know what? After my first grandparent died, I said, I want to go back and spend some time with them, you know, before more people die.
Yeah, right.
You know, really. So when I got out there, that's when I got into comedy. And my sister was living out there. She and she actually had a friend that was a booker for it was a bar show in Santa Monica, and I got to know him, and he said, dude, you should try the stand-up thing. I think you do really well. And I had no idea what I was doing, and I did, and, I loved it. It was great. And so I got into it, and so I actually did really well in L.A., but, you know, I was young and dumb, and I was not making great choices, and, you know, I ended up just kind of getting out of it because I had to make money, you know, and then eventually
life,
that thing
get in the way of all the dreams.
So eventually I met my wife now, and we eventually moved back to South Dakota. Well, I mean, there's no comedy in South Dakota.
Not a lot. Yeah,
You know what I mean?
I was like, there's comedy. There's been comedy.
There is.
Just not very, it's very sparse.
Well, you have to be very creative. You have to be real resourceful.
Yep.
If you're a comic in South Dakota. Well, I mean, I decided I should use my degree. So I went into teaching, you know, I went to school for education. And so we were both teachers for 10, 12 years and without, so I took a long break from comedy.
Okay.
And then I started doing comedy again, just like you said. But I started doing them for churches. And yeah. For you know.
So when you came back into comedy, you just went right into doing like corporate essentially.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Clean comedy churches and more on the corporate side.
Right. Because
and that would explain why you would slip under a radar because if you're not doing like. Clubs or shows or whatever.
Well, and the thing is when I was living in South Dakota, there's no open mics you go to. It's not like, you know, in the Twin Cities, you can get up every single night of the week and multiple times if you want.
Yep.
You know, there's nothing like that, you know, in South Dakota. Yeah, so I remember, like, after 12 years of not being on stage, my first comedy gig was an hour gig at a church. And it went really well, considering, because I mean, of course, I had my course set and I had done some writing, and I will say it wasn't very tight.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, you have the, you know, I still watch that back sometimes, and I mean, it's like, holy, there was like 45 yeah. seconds without a joke. But
curiosity, just real quick, what did you teach?
PE.
Oh,
I'm from South Dakota. I thought we covered that, Dan.
Oh man, that's hilarious! Because I did not see that coming. Like only because I was when you're writing and you're you know artsy and stuff. I was expecting you to be like an English teacher, or art teacher, or something like that. And you're like P.
Yep. And you're keeping in mind you're half Japanese math.
And I'm like, nope, math had nothing to do with it. I was fully thinking artist, like either English teacher because you like to write, or art teacher,
maybe even a foreign language.
Yeah, but. PE did not see that coming. Although that does check out. Comedian, broke comedian takes job. PE, okay, it checks out.
So I'm an extra. I can teach you the rules of dodgeball really well, Dan.
I love it. I love it. That's great. Okay, so your first time back, you're performing. You do this hour. You said it went pretty good, but it's still a little loose.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, after not being on stage, you know, and then that's when I remember, oh yeah, stage time. You know, so at that time it's like, okay, if we're gonna do this, you know, I need to create my own opportunities. Like I said, we didn't. There's no open mics. There's nothing. No opportunities like that where I was.
Yeah, so they're far and few between. That's for sure.
Right.
Now, so, were you in Rapid City?
I was. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. Because I know. Over the years, there has been some open mics and some comedy there, here and there, but it's always been sporadic. It's never been consistent.
Right.
But, like in Sioux Falls has always been pretty consistent with having open mics at least once a week. You know, well, when I started, it was more like once a month, and then as the comedy kind of grew in South Dakota, it now it's evolved, and you can get up a couple times a week in Sioux Falls. But that still doesn't compare to, like you said, in the Twin Cities, where you can get up almost multiple times almost every night of
the week. Right. So I just started, you know, I remember a comic saying, you know, you have to create your own opportunities. You can't, you know, so many young comics think that they're just going to sit back and be funny and everything's going to come to them, you know, and you've got to, you know, just like anything else, you've got to be proactive and you've got to do things for yourself and you got to hustle.
Yeah. Yeah, that's for sure. That's you got to work hard, like it, especially when you're not famous. You know what I mean? Like if you don't have like a big TV credit, because in comedy, having a big credit of some sort definitely helps get you booked and get you shows. That's just how it is. But if you don't have that and you want to be a working comedian, and there's plenty of comedians that make a decent living doing comedy and they live comfortably, they're not well known, not necessarily household names, but it's because they hustle. Right. You know, they're out there trying to get to work.
Right.
Trying to, you know, do what they got to get booked.
Right.
But now we're going to talk about what this podcast is really about. Now that I got got a little bit caught up on your background, because that was just more for my curiosity. Like, how did he slip through the radar? But that all makes sense now. You said you did this gig when you went back to comedy. You did that first gig and it went fine. But I'm sure over the years, especially in corporate comedy, because I know I've done corporate comedy, gigs don't go so well. I want to hear a time of a show you did that did not go so well.
Well, let's see. Which one should we pull out?
Should we talk about the post-prom or the prom dinner?
But the first one that always sticks out in my mind, and you're right. It's interesting how some corporate gigs are, you just crush and it's great. There's others where, it's just like, my boss doesn't need to be here and I'm gonna power through this and it's just that, crickets. But
and then there's some where you do like your opening joke and somebody panics and wants to light you already.
Right. But the one that I remember is actually my first. I was living in LA and it was my first, I got a road agent, and my first tour that I was put on was actually Rapid City was one of the places, and so I moved out to LA, and then he sends me back to it was Rapid City, Dickinson, North Dakota, Bismarck, Moorhead, and I was in Moorhead, Minnesota.
Yep.
Right on the border of North Dakota, and I remember it was a bar gig, and it was a Monday night, and it was on a Monday night game where the Packers and the Vikings were playing, and it was a sports bar where they were playing the game, and there were literally two people in the audience right in front of me, and so I started my set and of course, people at the bar turn around, telling me to shut up or trying to listen to the game, and pretty soon they just the people up front just went to the bar and stuff. So I'm just talking to myself, and so I just did my show. It turned into a good 7 minutes, but that was interesting. And then the two people who started in the audience ended up taking me out for breakfast that night. So
That's good.
So it ended on a positive note.
So those two people that were there actually for the show enjoyed it, but everybody else was
until the game started.
So they were enjoying the show, and then the game started like while you're performing.
Yeah.
Oh, geez. Yeah, that's one thing I've noticed in comedy is that anytime there's comedy at a sports bar and there's a big game going on, it's not going to be a good show.
No.
Doesn't matter what you do, it's not going to be a good show because nobody at that sports bar is there to see comedy. They're there to see their team.
Right.
Play. Drink and watch that team play.
Right. That's like trying to have an open mic at the blue line, during a Wild game,
Yeah, exactly. It's not going to happen. No, not going to work. Interesting. That's great. Vikings game, huh? Vikings and Packers. Really, really tough there. Now, when you're up on stage or when you're performing and you start feeling like you're starting to bomb or you do a joke and it doesn't land, what kind of goes through your mind in that time?
What goes through my mind? Yeah. Well, I think a lot of things go through my mind, Dan. Number one, I think PE wasn't such a bad gig. it's funny because you have that, and when you're writing jokes, you have such that anticipation because obviously you think it's funny. Then you have to put yourself in the shoes of the audience. Will they get it? Is this going to be a genuine joke? Is it really a surprise? You're analyzing the joke, and if you feel it worthy to get on your set. And it doesn't go well, it's just like anything else. It's disappointment, and then you go, and then my next thing is I got to fix that. Mm-hmm. I got to fix that. But I think that's a detriment because I'm thinking in my mind, I got to go back and fix it. I got to figure out, was it the writing? Was it the delivery? Why didn't that joke hit? And I should be thinking. Next joke. let's go. But
you already go in to try to figure out what's going wrong.
Yeah, let's put that on the back burner. We'll deal with that later. But it's always it's interesting. But I I'd like to, I'm working on trying to see that as a challenge, because I mean, I think a lot of us, even with jokes that are do okay, you know, you get a laugh consistently, but you know, there's, I think we have to have, the mindset that jokes are never done, you know, they can always be better, you know, so
I agree.
And I found myself, you know, just writing some of my jokes that just, that have worked all the time. And, you know, you find yourself, I mean, kind of getting bored of your own jokes.
Oh, for sure.
You know? And so, you know, I think that we get lax, some of us, with our jokes that work, and which we could really do a lot better job in going back and polishing those up.
I agree with that. I'm always trying to rework my joke, because as you evolve as a person too, some of the jokes don't necessarily, they're not the same as when you first wrote them, so you can kind of update them or whatever. And that's, I'm always trying to evolve my material as I evolve as a person. But now this is talking about that too, you know, where you're talking about working on the joke and figuring it out. When you do write material, I know, because you're doing corporate gigs and stuff, is that, how do you, like, you get a joke and you write a new joke, do you just throw it in there to test it out when you're performing? Because you don't get a lot of opportunities to go to open mics because you're busy. Is that kind of what you do?
Yeah, and usually I try to slip them in the middle. You know, try to sandwich them in strong, in between strong material, you know, and so, yeah, that's kind of the technique I use, you know, and if it doesn't work, okay, let's just slide by that one and then we'll fix it later, you know?
So when you bomb or when you have a bad joke that doesn't land, what's your process to try to correct it and fix it?
One of my go-tos is just acknowledge it. You know, in the crowd, and you know, just say, you know, sometimes in comedy, you know, things don't work, and you just experience that with me, you know, something like that, and just to acknowledge the joke, and to make a joke about a joke not working.
Yeah,
you know, I think you know, in corporate and like my church audiences, they appreciate that, and they think it's funny, and so that's kind of my life raft with jokes that don't work as well as I want.
But I mean, I'm talking about retooling them, like the actual, you do a joke, it didn't work, now you're going back and analyzing the set. What do you try to do to make the next time you tell that joke, try to make it work?
I think there's a couple things. The main two things that I look at is the actual content of the joke and the delivery. You know, it's like, usually it's one of those two things. Sometimes it's the audience, but I hate to go there because, you know, you hate to blame an audience. I mean, I don't know. After being in front of audiences, I do think there is such thing as bad audiences. I really don't want to go there because, you know, it's my responsibility as the entertainer to engage them and make them laugh, you know, no matter who they are. But, you know, there are jokes that that works here but doesn't work here. But those are the main two that I look at is the construction and the content of the joke or the delivery. And, you know, so those are the two things that I work on. And, you know, when I look at the content, it's like, I mean, first of all, what we need to understand what creates laughter, you know, and, you know, it's misdirection, it's surprise, it's incongruence, whatever it is. You have to look at those elements. And, you know, and a lot of times you look at the joke, it's like, well, you know, that didn't create surprise. That didn't create any misdirection, you know, so it's got to be a sharper contrast, whatever. So you look at that, and then I really like to analyze the delivery, because I think that's one of the fun parts of comedy, is that that's what makes it an art, is that you play with the delivery and see what works, because there are millions and millions of ways you can present something. And so it's your job to find out what that is and the best way to present or the delivery of a joke, you know? So that's a cool thing. It also makes it a hard thing. You know?
Yeah, it absolutely does. Now, while you were saying that, this kind of popped in my head too. So you do a little bit of musical comedy, is that? Because we did a show together, corporate for a prom dinner where we were not the demographic that should have been booked for that, but three middle-aged guys should not have been the entertainment at a prom, but we were. And you had a guitar. You ended up not getting to use it because the PA situation just wasn't ideal or whatever. But so that's why I was curious. It's like, because I've never seen you actually do musical comedy. And the few times that we performed, just that one time you had the guitar with you. How long, is that something you've always done, has had musical comedy, or is that something you, over the years, you've kind of incorporated into your act?
No, I've always been very musical. I've loved music, and I love, you know, pop music, and let me be real careful when I say pop music, popular music. You know, I love, like, the 90s grunge era, you know, I grew up on that, and I mean, you know, just music was always a big part of my life, and you know, I played guitar and piano and when I was a kid, and so I've kind of infused that in, like, towards, and but I didn't want to, you know, I didn't want to be sticky with it, and that was going to be my,
and make it your act,
right? And so typically what I do is I close with some music stuff, and, you know, like one of my closing bits is how I talk about how British singers, you know, lose their British accent when they sing, you know. So I just kind of mimic them as they're talking, and then sing a song, yeah. And just do some wordplay and jokes off that. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, music isn't a huge part of my act, but, you know, so, like you said, I don't want music to identify my act.
No, for sure.
But, you know, I do, it's a part of me, and so that's, that's what I do.
What all our comedy should be, is it should be a part of us as far as who we are. I, like I said, that's why I was asking, because I knew it wasn't your act, because I've never seen you do it.
Right.
I've seen you have a guitar with you once, but not, didn't actually have it in your act. That's why I'm, like, curious about that. Yeah. And for those people listening, just so you know, when he talks about his loving popular music, he's literally wearing a vintage MTV shirt right now, so he's not lying.
Yeah. Right.
He did grow up in an era.
Yes. I miss those days.
Yeah. You walked in with that shirt, I was, like, immediately, like, just brought back to high school.
Right,
I remember the days.
Exactly.
We gotta be close to age, I'm sure, just based on the shirt you were wearing.
Yeah.
Now, the bumming and bombing, the dreadful feeling you get when you have a bad set or your bomb, how long does that typically last for you, and how has it changed and affected you over the years?
I think it depends on the situation. You know, it's just like anything else. If you put in, you know, you get what you put in. I mean, if it's a show that you really want to do well, and, you know, I think and then you don't perform as well as you did, I mean, there's a probably a longer grieving period, so to speak.
Yeah.
But, you know, when I was younger, man, I used to take that so hard. You know, is this what I'm supposed to be doing? You know, I think we second guess ourselves. You know, what am I doing here? And, you know, now I'm more mature. I'm older now. So I think I process that a lot differently.
Tomato.
Yeah. I process that a lot differently now, as more, you know, being, you know, more constructively, not being so negative with myself, and but, you know, analyzing why it didn't work or why it wasn't as good as I thought. So but I think that's part of the process, is that, you know, it's your feelings are much more into it when you're younger, and your feelings are more invested, and now I'm at the point where, you know, I try to take those moments and make them constructive, and just use them to get better.
Yeah. Instead of, I can definitely relate to when you know, the negativity where you, like, berate, kind of like, maybe you shouldn't do this, and you question everything. Yeah. And as you, like you said, as you get older and mature, it's more like, okay, I need to just reevaluate what happened and figure out how to not let that happen again, kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah, to definitely try to do that to get better. Now, going back to the comedy club, that's a big task. You're opening up a big comedy, a clean comedy club here in the Twin Cities. Do you have, I don't know as far as what you can and can't talk about yet, but do you have, like, headliners you can talk about that are upcoming?
Yeah, we do. We're booked through.
First, how about talk when you're opening, How about that?
Yeah, we're opening September 10th and 11th is our opening weekend. And Bonehampton is going to be our headliner for that weekend. A guy named Jake Rubel is coming up from Indianapolis to feature. He's a really funny guy. He's starting to blow up in Indianapolis. He just started about, I want to say, three and a half, four years ago, and he's just gotten he's really doing a great job, and he's getting better and better, and he's a funny dude. But Bone, you know, I don't know if you know Bone, but he's
I know I've heard I know of him. I don't know him personally, but I know of him.
Yeah, he's got a dry bar out, and he was, I think, on season 3 or 4 of Dry Bar, and you know, he lived in LA for a while. He's a writer for The View. He's a funny dude. He used to play football for North Texas University, and he talks about that a lot. But he's a heavy hitter. He's gonna bring a good show. We have Lee Harden is coming, I think, the second weekend. He's another Dry Bar guy. I know we have Annie Beningo coming out. I don't know exactly what. I don't have my calendar.
You know, mentioned some of the. You don't have to have specific dates.
I'm sure
you have a website, or you will, where people can go find all that info. But
yeah, so we've got we're booked through October, and so we're still obviously booking. One thing that I would like to get out is we'd like to get features on from the Twin Cities. You know, that can work clean and. Excited to, you know, tap into some local talent as well, you know, because again, you know, the talent is, you know, there's a lot of it here.
Yeah, there absolutely is.
So I'm excited to get to know more more local comedians.
So do you have, as far as your club goes, do you know, like, are you just going to be open Friday, Saturday, or are you going to do, like, some, you know, because, like, some comedy clubs, they have their main weekends for headliners, but then, like, throughout the week, they'll do shows where maybe it's a locally produced show, or, you know, open mics, whatever it might be, but throughout the week, or are you pretty much just going to stick to a strict Thursday, Friday, Saturday, or Friday, Saturday, that kind of thing? Or you still haven't kind of play it by ear?
To start off, we're going to start off with Friday, Saturday shows. You know, we're going to keep Thursdays for, like, special events. Just like you said, we're kind of thinking about some locally produced shows. We're going to do an open mic. We haven't nailed down the open mic. I'm thinking a Monday night. But, you know, it's hard to stay away from we're trying to stay away from there's open mics here in the Twin Cities every night, so it's hard to avoid. So we're looking at that, but we are going to have an open mic night, but we just haven't set that yet.
No, for sure. No, that's great. I figured you guys would, but I'm not going to do it on air, but after we're done, I'll talk to you a little bit about that.
Got
an idea to throw it. Yeah, for the open mic. Yeah. No, that's great. So clean comedy coming up. September 10th and 11th is your grand opening weekend. That's great. Congratulations.
Thanks.
That's awesome.
Thanks. We're excited.
We're going to kind of wrap up here. I like to end. I mean, that was pretty positive, talking about a new venture and new comedy club. That's always great. But I have a Art of Bombing Get Pumped for Comedy playlist. Is there a song that pumps you up? Not necessarily to do comedy, but just like if you're, you know, maybe you're getting ready to teach PE. Is there a song that gets the blood going for dodgeball?
The Wheels on the Bus. Yeah. I don't know. I think, like, anything Metallica, Pearl Jam.
Oh, okay.
I'm old schooler.
Which is it? I know you said you were a big fan of grunge, so.
Okay, let's go with, let's see. Let's go with One by Metallica. You can't go wrong with that.
One by Metallica. That's going on the playlist. Sweet. Okay, and then I like to talk about bad gigs, but I always like to hear about some good, like a good gig that you had. So far in your career, what's been one of your best gigs that you've got to do?
I thought, and I know you recorded a Dry Bar last fall.
Yep.
And I think I recorded my Dry Bar 3 weeks after you.
It was like right after me. I did mine in October, and I feel like you did yours in November.
November, yeah.
Yeah.
I had two great sets. at the Dry Bar. I mean, you and I have talked a little bit about that, but it was a great, you know, that was a show where everything comes together just as it should. You know, in comedy, you know, you have a great audience, you have a great atmosphere, the lighting is good, the sound is good. I mean, everything comes together. It's not like at a bar where it's not set up for comedy, you know.
Their staff and production team are top-notch.
Phenomenal.
Super professional, super nice, almost to the point where it was like creepy nice.
Right.
It's
right.
Like, whoa, not used to being treated like this.
That's right. So I think my Dry Bar filming was, you know, we shot two shows, as you know, and they both went very well. But I also just had a show, like I said, it was actually the Christian Singles show about a month ago or so, and it was a really good show, because, you know, going into, again, those corporate shows, you don't, and you've never been there, you don't know what the venue is. You know, it was at a big church camp, but the venue was good. It was like a kind of sanctuary, like in a church, and you know, it's actually set up for a church situation, but it was really good. I mean, for whatever reason, I find that shows that I do really well is that I feel like I connect with the audience. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like at the end of the show, they know who I am and they feel what I've felt, and they're a part of the experience, you know. And
yep.
And so I a lot of times that's how you gauge how well your shows are. Sometimes you do those shows where it's like, there was nothing. There was no relationship there with you in the audience, you know. So, it was that show about a month ago is sticking with me, and I'm reflecting on, you know, what went well and trying to build on that.
Mm-hmm. Just trying to keep that momentum going. That's great. Beautiful. The last thing I like to do, we're going to play a game called Pick a Number. You're going to pick a number between 1 and 20. I'm going to ask you a corresponding question that may or may not be related to comedy.
Okay. Sounds good.
So you give me the number and...
I'm going to pick 5.
5. All right. Okay, you're going to have to pick a new number because the question is, how did comedy start for you? And we already talked about it.
Okay. Let's go 5 times 2, which is 10.
Okay. If you could take 3 things to a desert island, what would they be and why? So 3 items to a desert island.
Okay. I would take my iPad for Netflix. I would take my pillow, because I have to have my pillow.
Yeah.
I take my pillow on the road everywhere, so I have to have my pillow.
My fiance takes her pillow,
yeah,
too.
My own pillow. And my toothbrush. I can't stand hairy teeth.
Yeah.
I've got to brush my teeth.
Oh, now here's the kicker. Here's a dilemma. That's pretty good. Pretty good choices. But how are you going to play Netflix on the iPad without Wi-Fi? I hope you have some stuff downloaded on there.
Once again, did we cover I taught PE?
Oh, yeah, that's okay. Right. And you're from South Dakota.
Yes.
2 strikes already. Oh, that's great. All right. Where do you want to direct people? Where can they find you on social media? Information
sure.
about the new club, any of that stuff?
Sure. My social media is at KyleYamadaComedy.com. My website is KyleYamadaComedy.com. Mm-hmm. And for the club, go to GuttysComedyClub.com. Yeah. And when you go to GuttysComedyClub.com, you can pick a location, Indiana or Minnesota. So, and then I believe we're putting up the shows. I think tickets are going to go on sale here later this week. So,
oh, perfect.
So we're excited about that. So, yeah, go check us out.
So tickets will be on sale by the time this comes out. So,
yep.
Yeah, so go to GuttysComedyClub.com to get those tickets for the brand new Clean Comedy Club in the Twin Cities. All right, this has been fantastic, Kyle. Thanks for joining me.
All right, thanks for having me, Dan.
This has been brought to you by Dead and Mellow. Follow us on all your social media platforms and shop around at deadandmellow.com to see all of our stand-up, music, and podcast releases. Thank you, and God bless America.
right, see you later.
Are we actually leaving or just it?
The Art of Bombing is a Blitzed Entertainment production, hosted and produced by me, Dan Bublitz Jr. The stand-up spotlight bumper was produced by Joe Nicola Music. The Art of Bombing theme music was written and performed by John Holt. All other music was used under Creative Commons licensing. All stand-up audio clips were used with permission from the comedians. You can help the podcast by subscribing, leaving a 5-star rating, and a review. For previous episodes, merch, blogs, and more, please visit theartofbombingpod.com. And remember, stay safe so you can live to love.